Hey, good evening, everybody. So tonight, as always, we're going to have two shilas, and you let me know which shila you're more interested in speaking about. The first shila was not a shila that I was asked, but it's a shila that I was fascinated by. Apparently, last week, Rav Asher Weiss was asked the following shila from Melbourne, Australia. In Melbourne, they've been very, very strict with the COVID lockdowns, and last week, the government announced that starting on Friday night at midnight, there's going to be a total lockdown, all shuls are going to be closed, and obviously no one's going to be able to daven with a minyan starting Friday night at midnight in Melbourne, Australia. So the community over there asked Rav Asher Weiss, what should they do about Kriyas HaTorah, and particularly Parsha Shkalim? Meaning, or if it were to happen this week, I guess the shaila would be Parsha Zachar. Should they get together and do Kriyas HaTorah at night, similar to like we do on Simchas Torah? Or do you say, no, Kriyas HaTorah is for Shabbos morning davening, and if they can't do it Shabbos morning, so that's it, so then they just won't have Kriyas HaTorah. So that was the shaila Rav Asher Weiss was asked last week. He put out a tshuva in his weekly email this week on that topic. The second shaila, I got an email yesterday from a Jew from Chicago, and the email reads as follows. Dear Rabbi Leibowitz, I hope you're doing well. I have a shaila that I'm hoping you can help me address. Many Chicago neighborhoods have public street parking, and residents do not have private parking or garages. When it snows, there is sometimes considerable effort residents need to go through to shovel their car out of their public parallel parking space. After doing so, they put personal objects, chairs, strollers, vacuums, etc., in the space to claim it as their own. This is common, and many frum people also do this. My questions are, number one, does one have any right to claim a public parking space because they were the one that shoveled it? Number two, depending on the answer to above, does one have the right to move someone else's chairs in order to park in an otherwise open space? And number three, my intent above is to understand the halachic approach. Does this vary from a midos-based approach, meaning not everything that's mutar la'halacha is necessarily recommended to do? Would we say it's that's something that's appropriate for a frum person to do? So again, shaila number one, if the shul has to go on lockdown starting at midnight on Friday night, should the shul lay in Kriya HaTorah, and particularly if it's one of the Dalet Parshios where we have a special takana to read the Dalet Parshios, should they take care of that at night, sometime at night, in order that they should at least get Kriya HaTorah in that week? And shaila number two, if you live in Chicago and you spend a lot of effort, or I guess in New York now, and you spend a lot of effort shoveling out your car, so do you have the right to say, you know, I shoveled out the spot, granted it's on a public street, but I'm going to put cones down on the street and I'm going to block off the spot, or I'll put something else down to block off my spot. Why should anyone else benefit from my hard work? That is shaila number two. Let me look at the voting. It is overwhelming. No one wants to talk about shaila number one. Sorry, Shlomo. You're the only one. Okay, overwhelming. But in good news for Shlomo, Rav Asher Weiss wrote about it, so you can read the tshuva. We might actually have time to talk about it. I don't know how much I have to say about the other shaila. We'll see. But it happens to be just, it's interesting. Rav Asher Weiss wrote a tshuva where he obviously did the research, and there's a, I'm not going to go through the whole tshuva now, but I'll just mention, he quotes a tshuvas marsham that discusses a case of Shas HaDchak, whether they're allowed to do Kriyas HaTorah before Alos HaShachar, because Kriyas HaTorah really, Mikra Adin, could be Bayom Kibalayla, and when you can't do it Bayom, so then you could do it Balayla as well. So I saw Rav Schachter tonight at a wedding, and I said, you know, Rav Asher Weiss had a fascinating shaila. I figured I'll get some good stuff, you know, for this year tonight. I said, Rav Asher Weiss had a fascinating shaila about this community in Australia. And Rav Schachter said, yeah, there's a Chuvas Marsham like that. It's just like that, you know. It's like sometimes you just like mouth agape, you know. Like, how do you know? How do you remember? How do you, last week I was talking to someone who said to me that I was talking to a friend of mine, to Rabbi Jonah Steinmetz, who told me that a line from Rabbi David Bashefkin, because I told Rabbi Steinmetz I could talk, but I have to wait till Rav Shachter's Parsha Shir is over. It was Friday, and I try to attend the Parsha Shir on Zoom. So he said that Rabbi David Bashefkin once said to him, "Don't you feel like you always feel like if you only had one more parsha shir, you'll know Kol HaTorah Kula, right? You're just missing one more parsha shir from knowing Kol HaTorah Kula, because that's what the parsha shir were like. It's just like it's mind blowing. What Henry right over here, but it does fall into the shaila that I asked earlier in the week. You aren't supposed to learn Tanakh night. It does exactly. Did you hear of Asher, Henry? Did you? You did. Okay. Yeah. He talks a lot about that. That shaila. So we had that shaila been chosen, that we probably would have spent half the shiur on that question of learning Tanakh at night. But anyway, but that was not the shaila that was chosen. Everyone is a wannabe Chicagoan. So Chicagoan. So let's talk about what you do in Chicago when you shoveled out your spot and you placed. I could tell you that I've seen this done elsewhere. Meaning. My shul is on a corner of the busiest street in our community, which is not a particularly busy street, but North Woodmere doesn't have any busy streets. So the busiest street in North Woodmere, the main street that runs through town, called Hungry Arbor Road, and that's where all the shuls are. All the shuls are on that that block. Pretty much all the shuls are on that block, and only one shul in the whole town has a parking lot. Somehow we all got variances, and we don't have. So you can imagine if you have a house on that block, it's kind of annoying that all these shuls are there, and everyone's just going to park up the whole block. You're never able to park in front of your house. So there are people that live near the shuls that will put out cones in on the street parking, public parking spot, and they'll put out cones to the now one. Week, someone, I don't think it was anyone from the shul, called the police, and the police came and they took away the cones, and they you're not allowed to block off a public public spot. So is it different if you're in Chicago and you did the work of shoveling? Then all of a sudden, does it become okay to block off the public spot? So I found an article, I didn't find it, a friend of mine referred me to an article that was put out by the Chicago Community Kollel, which I think is a Lakewood Kollel, if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Francis and Rabbi Zucker. The Chicago Community Kollel, this was put out in Tufshin Samach Hay. So this goes back 15 years. And the article was written by someone, Rabbi Moshe Rosenstein, where he discusses this shaila. And apparently this is a big deal in Chicago, meaning this is something that everyone who lives in Chicago has an opinion about, and is something that is spoken about. So he starts the article by saying that as in all areas of life, it's common for people to have visceral and at times strong feelings about issues. This practice is certainly no exception, but it is our duty and in fact our privilege to subjugate ourselves to the Torah and its dictates. So he goes on to discuss what does the Torah have to say about this. So you definitely get the sense that this is something that that has been an issue for people in the community. So he makes some interesting arguments in terms of why it would be mutter, meaning pashtus is you don't own that area, you don't own that space. So it's true that we have a concept that even a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim can become like it's yours with regard to your chiyuvim, meaning that's the concept of a barber Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. The Gemara tells us that shnei dvarim mareinim b'rishuso shalad v'asam v'kasuv ki'iluim b'rishuso, that there are two things that you don't really own, but the Torah makes it as if you own. What we mean by that the Torah makes it as if you own, it means that normally you're only responsible for things that are yours, but sometimes you could be responsible even if something isn't yours. And those shnei dvarim are chametz misheishos and lemaila, and a barber rishus harabim. So that's why it's a gemara in Bava Kamma and it's a gemara in Pesachim that if you have chametz after the zman isur, so it's no longer berishuso, but you have chiyuvim klapei that chametz. You're going to be responsible for that chametz. And the same with barber rishus harabim. I go into the middle of Hungry Arbor Road and I dig a bar, so I don't become the owner of the street, but if someone gets hurt on the street, on that bar, so I become responsible for it. L'chora, putting out any sort of kli or any sort of michshal or anything, even if it's not a michshal, any of my own stuff out in the Rosh Hashanah, I have no right to do that. It's not mine. The public space is not meant for your storage, and certainly not meant meant for you to block off from other people that you're supposed to be sharing it with. So the pashtus is, if someone gets hurt, if a guy pulls into the parking spot, I don't know, he said vacuum cleaners, they put vacuum, a guy pulls into the parking spot and crashes into my vacuum cleaner and it ruins his car, so pashtus is I'm chayiv for, well, kalim in a bar, okay, but you have to get into the dinim of bar. But the point is that I certainly, l'chara, should have no right. So what would be the svara to say that I have a right? So what he suggests in this article, I found fascinating, he suggests three different approaches to say a svara, why it might be permissible and why I might by rights be allowed to do this. The first svara, I think, is the most difficult one to accept. And he quotes this svara from... This is the opinion of one of the foremost poskim in America today, in a facts tshuva specifically addressing this topic. Permission was not requested from this posik to print his name. I have no idea. I don't know. It's a tshuva from somebody. Whoever you believe the foremost posek in America was in Tufshin Samachay, that might be the posek who faxed a tshuva to the writer of this article. I actually emailed the Chicago Community Kollel today, and I said, I know this is a long shot, but someone wrote an article 15 years ago and quoted the foremost posek. I would love to know who that posek is, and I did not receive an email back yet. Anyway, so the argument made by the foremost posek in America in Tavshin Samachay was the following, that there is a principle called Dina de Malchusa Dina. The Gemara says it in a number of places in Shas. It's always Shmuel that says Dina de Malchusa Dina. There's an interesting discussion. The Ritva in the Darim Dav Chav Ches says, wait, if it's always Shmuel that says it, how do I know that we pasken Dina de Malchusa Dina? Maybe it's only the Sheet of Shmuel and everybody else argues on Shmuel. So no, even if the others did argue on Shmuel, normally Hilchsa Kishmuel Bedini. And second of all, nowhere in Talmud Bavli do we find explicitly that anybody does argue on Shmuel. So it's most likely that everyone agreed to the principle, that the principle exists, and Shmuel is the one that formulated it with in that way, that Dina de Malchus Adina. So there is this principle called Dina de Malchus Adina. So what he suggests is that maybe Midin Dina de Malchusa, you're allowed to do this, because that's what everybody in Chicago does. And the police don't stop it, and they'll never ticket you for it, and they'll never they're not going to do anything about it. So it's become the Dina de Malchusa that it's permissible to do. The problem is, it's very hard to call something Dina de Malchusa when in all likelihood, and he points out this problem, the writer of the article points out this problem, when in all likelihood, the Dina de Malchusa on the books is actually the opposite. Meaning, in all likelihood, there are public street ordinances that city-owned streets, that they prohibit placing barriers on city-owned streets and doing things like that. Of course there are such laws on the books. You're not allowed to go and just put up cones in middle of, Broadway or whatever and just block things off. Of course there are such rules. So he wants to argue, yeah, but it's the mayor of Chicago himself said that it's been such a long-standing Chicago tradition to do this, and unless it gets out of hand, it will continue unhindered. What does out of hand mean? I'm not sure, but the argument is that if they turn a blind eye to it, so then it becomes a Dina de Malchus Adina. It becomes something that is permissible. It's a difficult argument because, again, it's Dina de Malchus Adina is that you it's a mechayev to follow the laws of the land when it comes to certain areas of law. Not every area of law, but certain areas of law for the general welfare of the community and things like that. But it certainly is not something that gives you heterim when it's against halacha. So if I'm not allowed to take something that doesn't belong to me and just start blocking off other people from using that which doesn't belong to me, from a halachic perspective, it's hard to say take Dina de Malchus Adina, which doesn't exist over here, where there is no din, and say because they turn a blind eye to it, so it's ki'ilu there's a din that explicitly permits it. There isn't a law that explicitly permits it. So what he argues is that even though it's clear that the city would never ticket someone for removing someone else's chair and taking a spot that was not his, the fact that it's well known that this is allowed to go on makes it as if it's an accepted law. So according to this approach, it would be totally permissible to put a chair out to hold the spot, and it would be usher to remove that chair to take away someone else's rights. I don't know. And that seems like you're playing both sides of the coin, right? That you're going to say, oh, it's Dina de Malchus Adina that I'm allowed to do it because the city would never stop me from putting out the chair. But I'm not allowed to take away someone else's because he has a right to do it. The city would never ticket me for taking away someone else's chairs and vacuum cleaners and whatever else he put in that spot. City would never bother me about it. So why don't you say that's Dina de Malchus Adina? It's just hard to play both sides of the same coin. Also, whenever studying Dina de Malchus Adina, right, so no, why is it different than jaywalking? So again, jaywalking is not inherently usser, meaning you're not doing something, it's only illegal because of the Dina de Malchusa. But over here, this is something that belongs to everybody, and you're claiming rights of it when it's not hafker. So that is something that if in our dinim would be problematic if we were following our dinim. Jaywalking would not be problematic if we were following our dinim. It only starts with Dina de Malchusa. So yes, there is an argument to be made that when you have a Din of Malchusa that the Malchus clearly doesn't care about, that they're just not interested in enforcing, that would not be covered under Din of the Malchusa. So like jaywalking or going within 5 miles per hour of the speed limit or whatever it is that they turn a blind eye to. I even heard one posek suggest double parking in the city during alternate side parking. It's probably not officially legal on the books, but it's Yadua, at least in Washington Heights, it seems the Yadua that everyone does that. But you know, you have things like that. I even heard one major posek, who I will not reveal his name, but one major posek. I don't know if he's the most major posek in America or not, but a major posek say that that's why you're allowed to pay your housekeepers off the books because they don't care. No one will ever bother you about it unless you plan on running for public office. No one cares, and if you run for public office, it's just a show that they make to try to uncover everything so that strictly speaking, it would not be a violation of Din Malchus Adina because this posek argued not only don't they care, they want you to do it because they have all these undocumented immigrants or whatever that need to eat, and instead of having them in shelters, have them have jobs and have them get paid off the books so that they can live, and it won't be the government's problem to figure out what to do with them. I don't know. You could argue on that svara, but that was the svara that I once heard from a very prominent posek in America. Don't know if it's the same posek. But whenever you're discussing Din Malchus Adina, you always have to go back to the issues of why do we have Din Malchus Adina? So I don't think we have to go through a whole shiur right now about why we have Din Malchus Adina, but it does make a difference in terms of the parameters of Din Malchus Adina. And typically it's most often used to describe the right of the king to tax, that the taxes are Din Malchus Adina, but laws of public safety, you would imagine, are also included in Din Malchus Adina, because that's something that certainly the government has jurisdiction over. Especially if you say like the Shita of the Rush in the third part of the Darim, that it's the basis of Din Malchus Adina is that it's the king's land, so he gets to make the rules. Or like the Rashbam in Bab Basra, that everybody accepts the government authority, and that's sort of the condition of living here. And therefore, if the government decides that those are going to be the rules, then those are going to be the rules. I always favored Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, based on Rashi and Gittin Daf Tes. Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer explained Dina Malchus Adina is based on the fact that one of the Shev Mitzvahs Bnei Noach is that they have to set up dinim. So what? They're going to have to set up dinim, and then we're going to ignore those dinim? Then our halacha is going to be, we're going to say, you must set up dinim, so that we can ignore them. I mean, that seems difficult to understand why that would be the case, that they would set up dinim just so that we can ignore them. So again, I do believe that it's within the jurisdiction of the government to say Dina Malchus Adina over here, but it's very hard to say Dina Malchus Adina when the opposite is true, meaning when the actual din on the books is the opposite. So what else might give you the right to put out these cones and these chairs? So another approach that he suggests is that it's not Dina Malchus Dina, there's a shutfus, meaning just like when you own an apartment in a building. So who pays for the gardeners and who pays for the for whatever else, for different things that you know, the lights, the electric bill in the hallway and the lobby, and you know, maintenance of the building and things like that. So that's everybody's responsibility to pay for. So when you pay taxes and you're paying taxes as part of a shutfus, as Rav Schachter often likes to say, that when people quote the Ran in Maseches Nedarim to say that you don't have to pay taxes in Israel, because Dina Malchus Dina, the Ran says, apparently doesn't apply in Eretz Yisrael, because every Jew has a right to Eretz Yisrael, and it's not only the Melech doesn't have the right to tell us what to do, because it belongs to the Jewish people. That doesn't apply to taxes, Rav Schachter said, that to the taxes that we have nowadays. Taxes, as the Rishonim spoke about it, as the Gemara speaks about, is when the king just wants more money. So he'll just tax the people to have more money. But if the government is collecting taxes so that you can have garbage pickup and a police force and, you know, all the services that that the people need, that's a shutfus. That's like people that live in an apartment building that that share the burden of responsibility of paying for the things that you do together. So it could be that all the members of the city are shutfim, and anyone who pays taxes has the same rights as everybody else to use the streets. So it's one big partnership. Oh, so why does that help over here? Well, just like in halacha, there are certain parameters of shutfus that are determined by what the common practice is, meaning what I buy a snowblower together with my friend. So now we're partners in the snowblower. So when I'm using it, is he allowed to come and say, wait a second, I want it right now, I need it right now, we're shutfim, you take it for 1 second, I'll take it for 1 second, one like that? He can't do that, because that's crazy. That's not a way to divide something. It's not a way to split something. If there's a prevailing practice of how to do it, probably first come, whoever starts using it first gets to use it till he's finished with it, and then the other party could come and use it, or can take it and use it. So that would determine what the rules of the partnership is. So maybe you could say, once it's become such a widespread practice in Chicago, which apparently it has, so it's ki'ilu, those are the rules of the shutfus, that the first person to go there and to shovel themselves out is the one that has the rights to that parking spot until the snow melts, and therefore you're even allowed to put out a chair. So that works if you assume that it's a shutfus aleph. First, you have to make the assumption that it's a shutfus and that that's the way it works, as opposed to the city owned streets. I mean, there are many parts that are a shutfus, but city owned streets, it could be that it's not a shutfus, that it's owned by the jurisdiction, it's owned by the city, and it assumes that that is so widely accepted. So maybe in Chicago it is, elsewhere it's not. Okay, then there's a third possibility. The third possibility is a halacha that appears in Maseches Kiddushin. Well, there are two halachas. There's a halacha that appears in Maseches Gittin on Daf Nun Tes, and a halacha that appears in Maseches Kiddushin Daf Nun Tes. It's interesting, you think of Gittin and Kiddushin, it must be a halacha in Evan Ezer, it must be about marriage and divorce. No, Daf Nun Tes in each Masechta, purely Choshen Mishpat, the halacha. The halacha is that if you have an ani that climbs onto a tree of hefker in order to shake out some of the peros from the tree, so he climbs an olive tree, he shakes some of the branches, olives fall to the ground, so the olives that fall to the ground are his. He never did a kinyan on them, he never picked them up, he never did, but they're his. He gets to keep them. And if the ani is on the tree knocking down the olives, and someone else comes and picks them up, that's gezel midivrehem. It's gezel midrabanan for someone else to come and say, oh, look at that, all these olives on the ground, I didn't even have to climb the tree, and just come and collect them for himself. Gezel midivrehem. It's gezel midrabanan. So that's ani amenakev perosh hazayis. That's the halacha in Maseches Gittin. So the difficulty with this halacha is it seems to be a direct stira to what the Gemara talks about in Kiddushin Daf Nun Tes, a halacha known as Ani Amahapich Becharara. Ani Amenakef Barosh Hazayah seems to be the exact opposite of Ani Amapech B'Charara. What's the case of Ani Amapech B'Charara? You have a person that makes some effort to be Kona something, and then someone else steps in and takes it from out from under him. I'm going and I'm looking at an apartment or something, and then I do all the work and I do all the research to figure out whether it's a good investment or bad investment, and then someone else swoops in and comes in and takes it from right under my nose. So that, the Gemara says, that the person who takes, when the Ani Amapech B'Charara, the Ani is trying to gather together, the person who takes it from him is a Rasha. The Shulchan Aruch says that he's only a Rasha if that type of item is available elsewhere. But if it's not available somewhere else, then the guy who comes in and takes it is allowed to snatch it up. There's no problem. It's totally mutter for him to come snatch it up. So if it's something that, you know, why is the guy a Rasha? The poor Ani is trying to acquire this thing. I have it available to me everywhere. Anywhere I go, I can find the same item. I have to dafka go to what the Ani is looking to get. I have to go and take it from him. That's a Rasha. But if I don't have it available anywhere else, and this is the only way I can get it, so he's not even a Rasha, even though the Ani had his eyes on it, and the Ani has been working toward it. So what is the Svara? Why is Ani Hamapich B'Charara any different than Ani Amenakev B'Rosh Hazayis? What's the difference between the two? So the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva in Choshem Mishpatzim and Ayin Tes, where he suggests the following approach. The difference between Ani Amahapech and Ani Amenakev is how much work the person did in order to get that object. When it comes to Ani Amahapech B'Charara, there's very little work that was done. He was just eyeballing it and looking and seeing that this is where I want to acquire something. So Chazal didn't have to make a Gezel Midivreim, that if you go and you take it out from under him, that's a Gezel Midivreim. But when it's Ani Amenakev, I had to climb up the tree and I had to go shake everything. So that's a lot of effort already to shake everything out of the tree and climb the tree. So Chazal said, in such a case, because of my effort, they're misakein that it's gezel midevrayim. Even though I didn't make a kinyan on it, it's pure hefker. It doesn't belong to me from a strict, from strict dinim d'oraisa. I never made a kinyan. So now, how much effort is effort? I don't know. But my guess is digging a car out of a Chicago snowstorm is way more effort than climbing an olive tree and shaking some of the branches to allow the olives to come down. If you shovel a little bit, you know, sometimes like you're shoveling and you're like winded and it's like not even halfway done, you know, like it's an avoda. It's a lot to do for a person to shovel. I would imagine that would be enough effort to qualify as Ani Amenakev B'Rosh Hazayis as opposed to Ani Amapech B'Charara. Oh, so based on that, maybe if a person clears out the spot and makes it available for himself to be able to park, he has acquired the right to that parking spot. And for someone else to come and use it, that's Gezel Midevrayim. It could be argued, and therefore you wouldn't even be allowed to take someone else's spot, even if they did not put a chair out there, even if they just left the spot wide open, because the person had to go through a lot of work to put it there. Unless you argue, no, if the whole world knows that you're supposed to put a chair there to block it off, and this guy chose not to put a chair there, so then it's his way of saying, I don't really need the spot, that I just needed to shovel myself out, but I don't really need the spot. So in this article he suggests, maybe that this argument's not so strong either. First of all, he says, I don't know how much effort would meet the criteria to make it Ani Amenakev. Okay, I would think shoveling does reach that effort. But then he says, if a person could even apply the rule of Ani Amenakev to public property, is that so pasha that you could do that? You're going to take public property? It's one thing you have property of hefker. This isn't hefker. This is public property. Public property is not hefker. Hefker means it belongs to nobody, and therefore it's there for the taking. Public property belongs to everybody. It's not that it belongs to nobody. So one could argue that that you don't have such a right to acquire that, meaning, how does Ani Amenakev work? Since it's Hefker, so the Rabbanan made a din that I don't have to go through the formal acts of Kinyanim. But if I did a Kinyan, I'd be able to become it. I'd be able to become the owner of it. Well, when you're dealing with a public street, there's no kinyan that I can make on it. It's not for sale. It's not available to me. So if there's no kinyan that I would be able to make it, it's just not something that can become mine. So then that would be a totally different din d'rabbanan. That would take a much bigger din d'rabbanan to say that it becomes mine. All the rabbanan did with Ani Amenakev is they said this works as a kinyan also. Shaking the olives out works as a kinyan also. Instead of doing Mashiach Agba or whatever the normal kinyan amar kinyan chatzer, whatever the normal kinyan amar, this works as a kinyan too. But if even a kinyan doesn't work, if I'm nol gadar uparatz, which on the parking spot, that doesn't work. It's not mine. Even if I do a formal act of kinyan, then it would be difficult to say. So each of these arguments have weaknesses, but the impression you get is that this has become such a widespread minhag in Chicago that Poskim worked hard to try to come up with an argument to make it mutter, to make it something, because that's what everybody does. So that's the impression you got. But if you live in a place where it's not that which everybody does, then it's totally inappropriate to do. It also doesn't seem right, if that's the minhag and that's what everyone does, even if you hold that they didn't have a right to do it, to go and remove their chairs and take the parking spot, doesn't seem like a great idea. It doesn't seem like that's the mental thing either. Even the meaning when you talk about what's permitted from a strict halachic perspective versus what the mental thing to do is. So the question was, is even if it's halachically mutter to put the chair out, maybe it's not mental to put the chair out. I would say the other way, that even if it's halachically mutter to remove the chair and park your own car there, it certainly wouldn't be mental to remove the chair and park your own car there. So anyway, so that is the issue of Chicago parking. And as far as the Kriya Sator at night, it happens to be, just to let you know, Rav Asher Paskin, that they should do it, that they should learn Parsha Shkalim at night. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos, and thank you for coming and learning tonight.
Thank you.